Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I am trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
And who I am is Will Bluewater, OCO, again, Lee, Tehiju, Tehigu. I'm fine. How are you? We're here tonight with my co-host, Mark the Batcher, Borcherding, and our special guest this evening, she's kind of a wolf lady, and she's going to be talking about her book, maybe Wolves and Humans, A New Story of Coexistence, and, you're a ham there, yeah. Back in your cave. Okay. How you doing, Elka Dewar?
Hi.
She's going to talk
Hello.
About harmonizing the human land relationship. And before we get started, Mark's going to do her Mayan birth glyph reading. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, in the
traditional Mayan day count, she was born on a day called Six Chuan or Six Bat in the Guatemalan Maya terminology. The six has to do with kind of a imbalance or unbalancing of things. And not that she's unbalanced, but relating to that and test things to learn and change and evolve into that relate how to basically balance out the unbalance.
Harmonizing.
Yeah, sort of like that. And it's more than just, it's on a level that has to do a little bit more with not just, you know, her personally, but the bats part of it has to deal with the weaving of time and destiny, history, humanity, and all that. Bats had, in the Chuen glyph was, according to the Mayan Chalam book, it was one bats was actually the thing that started off the day count in the birth of the 20-day cycle of the Dzogchen. And so that's where it goes back and relates that back to that thread of time and weaving of things. And so that's her birth is connected back to that. So we'll look at the next aspect of time and weaving in time with the six sun Dzogchen. And it has a forward flow of time, a backward flow, and where these two time flows come together into the unity or zero point. So we'll take the forward flow of time first. That's the way we normally perceive time. Our senses, our five senses, pick up on that. Our psychic sense can actually see the backward flow of time, but our normal physical senses only register the forward flow. So on the forward flow, hers, since her birth, has to deal with things to do with kind of purity of things, purifying things, things there about water, liberation of things, a lot about birth, natural ways of things. So those type of things probably maybe been around her a while. And connected real heavy on the beginning of things and the birthing of things and things starting and stuff like that's probably been in various ways, been around her a long time. Probably came in with it before she was born, already was doing it. And a lot about the, not just birthing, but the intention of the birthing. What is the intention? What's happening and, you know, like in a prayer intention or something like that. And it has a lot to do with probably under all her life, she's probably been one of those persons or kids and even adults, all that. It's kind of just been a person that's kind of fairly optimistic, probably very thankful, just a lot of thanking. Thanks Creator a lot, probably, I would say. And so we'll look at the backward flow of time, and this is stuff that's maybe showing up more recently in her life as more powerful. Not more powerful, but working with the other, but affecting her maybe a little bit more. And usually we tie this into somewhere around in the year 1997, 1998, somewhere in there, a little bit before, a little bit after, but roughly in that time frame is maybe showing up. And in that, she has the Ik glyph, which is Blue Otter's birth glyph. It's not a nine. Hers is a three Ik, but it's a multiple there. And it's about bringing an aspect here of sharing things, especially things that have to do with spirit, prayer, and service to humanity, earth, and all that type of stuff, you know, just in general. And it has jaguar energy associated with this. And some of them, the jaguar thing is actually can be, sometimes has a little bit of other types of things like dogs or wolves and stuff like that too. So, because they may not have a jaguar around in there. And It's in the harmony cycle, and on brings in the aspect of oneness and harmony. So that is probably part of that thing I said about sharing spirit and prayer and service and all that. It's really focused.
Yeah, there's one right now.
Not just harmony, but in this case, it's the harmony of Creator. Not just human harmony, but being in harmony with Creator and being one with Creator and understanding it. So where these two time flows come together, they create another one, and it's the two inner bats again. But this time its number is different, and its number is all about truth. So this is kind of her doorway or bridge that brings her from one world cycle to the next, but also allows the talents and skills, the things that she uses to bring other people with her. And it's kind of about, and has an aspect of here of kind of playing around, you know, like children do. But not just playing around, but knowing how to arrange the Maya or the illusion of reality with a supernatural power. And this arranging illusion of reality and the aspect of truth is going to have, she may have already had this happen. If it hasn't yet, it's probably going to, not too far away, of ancestors showing up and helping with that, how to do that. Mm. And those ancestors will be family, but they may not be, when I say ancestors, I'm not just saying, you know, like Native American ancestor type thing, but the ancestors may be both Earth and off-Earth ancestors. Not all of them necessarily are from here. And it's also sitting in the same Hunab-Ku harmony cycle as the three Eek that we just talked about. So those two are working very closely together. They're almost in the cycle. They're almost counterbalances to each other. Almost. Not quite, but just about only one day apart from doing that. So it's close enough. And so a lot here really strong about the aspect of harmony, but harmony with Creator is a very significant thing. Okay.
Wow. Well, what do you think of that, Ilka?
Yeah, that makes sense to me, actually. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the jaguar and the ancestors. Yes. So thank you for doing that. For me, I really appreciate it.
Well, if you would, yeah, just tell us about your work, how you got started, and you know what put you on the path, and what the path's been like, and where you think it's going. The time's yours, and if you we won't interrupt unless you take a breath for more than about 10 seconds.
Oh, thank you for giving. First of all, thank you for allowing me to share my passion and my work and my life's work with everybody. And
sure.
It really started, yeah, and for having me on today and giving me the opportunity to share, because I really love doing that, because it feels like that way I can inspire other people to also follow their path and their passion, and to bring out what is in them, because we are all very similar. So it started very early with me. I was a child in Germany growing up after World War II, where animals and the land really were the lowest ones on the totem pole in terms of our hierarchical way of being, and it was very human-centric, and animal rights were non-existent, and it was more like, if you can use it, eat it, wear it, or sell it, it's useful, and if you can't have this consumptive aspect of an animal, then it's useless. So early on, I was always speaking up for the animals, and I remember we had all these foxes. They were pretty much the last wild animals that we had. We had some wild boar and some deer, but nothing else. We had wiped out our wolves, our bears, our elk, our moose, our lynx. So we had some foxes left, but they could have had rabies, and people were really afraid of that. And so what they did was they struck preemptively, and they started killing all the foxes because they could, in parentheses, carry rabies. So I was very connected to the animals, and I knew they weren't sick, and I spent lots of time with them and observing them and being part of their families and seeing the puppies play. And what I did was I just basically stayed with them in front of their den and said, only over my dead body will you hurt these animals. And people had to carry me away asleep, basically. And they started killing the animals anyways, which was very sad. But nature is amazing. And what happened was not only did some of them survive, but the females that survived the next year, instead of 3 or 4 pups, they had 10 to 12. And if they had 12, then 10 of them were female, because nature wanted to keep going, and we really needed the foxes. We really needed the animals, and we couldn't afford to take any more out of the ecosystem. So even as a child, I was very, very in tune with the land and the animals, and I was always speaking up for them, to the point where some of the old Nazis that were still around in my village were saying, you're lucky that Hitler isn't around, because if he were, you wouldn't be. He would do away with somebody like you, because we don't need anybody who cares for the animals. We need to care for the people. The people are important and nothing else. And the interesting thing was, I grew up on an organic farm, and it stayed organic because we didn't have the money for the for all the pesticides and all the chemicals that started to spring up. And also my family didn't want to do it. They didn't want to transition to something so toxic, because they said that food and poison don't go together. And so I was very, very lucky to grow up in such a natural environment. And my grandpa took me around one day and showed me all the little plots of land we had. There weren't very many, and they were very tiny, but they all had a name. And one was called the Stony Field, for example, and it's kind of self-explanatory. And, you know, one was called the Wheat Field. And then he took me to a little piece of forest, a little sliver of forest, and he said to me, this is called the Wolf Trap. And my ears perked up, and I got all excited, and I was very, very happy. And I said, where are they? Now we're talking, you know. The wolves, where are they? Where are they? And he's like, oh, don't worry. We killed them all, so you would be safe. And instead of feeling safe and happy, I was like, my heart sank. And I said, but now I'll never meet them. Why did they kill them? They didn't ask me. I don't want them to be killed. And I don't feel afraid of them, and I never liked Little Red Riding Hood anyways, and all these stories. And so this is where it began. I looked my grandfather in the eye, and I said, I will bring him back, Grandpa. We need them here. And he looked at me and said, why would you want to do that? We worked so hard to exterminate them, and you want to bring him back? What? Why would you want to do that, and what would you want to do that for? And this is really when the seed was planted. And my whole life, I was missing the wild animals. My whole life growing up as a child, I was always missing the bears, the wolves, and the wild animals that we didn't have anymore. And I told my parents early on that I was going to leave Germany and live somewhere where there were wolves and bears and lots of snow and a cabin and lots of big animals. The other recollection I had, and I don't know where I got that from, because we really didn't have any books at home and nobody was telling me stories from faraway lands, but I had a recollection of the big herds that used to be roaming this earth, and especially the bison and the reindeer. I just knew about them. And when summer came along, I would tell my parents, who were farmers, of course it was the busiest time, you know, let's go. We need to go now. We need to move. We need to follow the herds of wild animals. We need to follow the buffalo. We need to follow the reindeer. And they would look at me like, what are you talking about? We need to stay and work on the farm. So I was kind of the opposite of the farm person who needed to stay put and harvest and planned. I was more like the person who wanted to follow the animals, the nomadic person. That was really very strong in me. And I remember bargaining with Santa, who was the Christ child. The German equivalent is the Christ child. And you could talk to the Christ child and tell him what you wanted for Christmas. And I got Legos and I got dolls because my parents had been really poor, born during the war and before the war. They had been very poor and they wanted to give their children, my brother and I, some really nice toys. So I didn't have a shortage of Legos or dolls or Barbies, but I didn't like them because what I liked to do was be outside and play in nature. And so I always bargained with the Christ child saying, listen, you can have my Barbies back and my Legos, and not to be ungrateful, but maybe you can give them to somebody who really wants them. What I really want is to spend time with the reindeer and with the bison and the wolf and the bears, and it never happened. But right after college, when I was 22 years old, I fulfilled my dream and I came to North America in search of home because I wanted to live somewhere where there were still wild animals and wilderness. And it was so amazing because when I saw my first real forest, I cried and cried and cried because it was so beautiful. Because in Germany, everything had been planted in rows and every stick of wood was picked up and the forests were picked up and almost looked like they were swept or cleaned. And so nothing was allowed to stay on the forest floor that fell there naturally. And so it was pretty sterile. But when I saw my first real forest where trees had fallen and things were leaning and things weren't all clean and uniform and in a row, I was so happy because for the first time in my life, I had seen real nature, and I had always felt how nature in my country was suffering from too much human interference and too much cleanup and too much logging, too much cultural landscape instead of having wilderness left. And we don't have any wilderness and old growth forest left in Germany. So when I saw my first wilderness, I was in love. I backpacked and it was in New Mexico in the Gila wilderness. And I was so happy to have finally found my space that I was really listening to the land, and she was telling me that even she was missing the wolves and the bears that had been annihilated in the 30s and all taken out. And so I decided to do something about that and help with the reintroduction of the Mexican gray wolves. And I was wondering how I could do that, and I thought, well, people are very, very visual and people love a good story, so I could tell a story through film. And I started on the documentary Stories of Wolves, The Lobo Returns, Lobo meaning wolf in Spanish, because the Mexican gray wolf is the lobo and used to roam from Phoenix all the way to Mexico City. And I started on a documentary, and I started giving talks and presentations in the schools, in the larger community. I did a German version of Stories of Wolves and brought it back to Europe because I decided that that was really necessary because all these stories about how wildlife had started in Europe and now they needed to end there. And I remember, too, Little Red Riding Hood. I felt like the wolf was so mistreated because misrepresented, and the girl really had a problem because she couldn't tell her grandmother apart from a wolf. And I would always look at my grandmother and say, well, I would never mistake you for a wolf or anything else. I know what a wolf is. I know what the grandma is. And I need to tell a different story. And little did I know that Little Red Riding Hood was one of the old, old ancient stories told to girls coming of age, hence the Red Riding Hood, and all the dangers that could be faced by such a young girl when not listening to the wisdom of grandma and to the elders. So it was really about the dangers that can face a little girl, like the hunter being the predator, the wolf, her own desires inside of her, and the need for navigating all these different things springing up in her with the wisdom of the elders and the grandmothers. But all these bones were taken out of the story, and the skeleton of it was really reduced to the wolf being the bad guy, the hunter being the good guy, and a little girl visiting her grandmother. So these stories really have a lot of substance to them when we really go deep and when we really go far back and when we really look at them and take them apart in terms of what they were supposed to do for us, because a good story can really help us to be propelled forward on our path. And so I thought I will be the storyteller of a new story of coexistence with wildlife, of harmony between wild lands, humans, and animals, all kinds of animals. Because even with our domesticated animals, they are not, we're still dominating over them. They are still supposed to serve us. We are still human-centric, and we still think about ourselves. And to give you an example is like, for example, horse therapy, you know, or dog therapy. The human feels a lot better when working with an animal, because the animal is so pure and so full of love and so giving. And that's all we want to get out of it. You know, we want to feel better. We want to leave our traumas behind. But we don't think about the animal. How does the animal feel after doing therapy with us, after working with us, after taking on our grief, our emotions? So we still have not entered the reciprocal relationship with the animals. And so I've taken on the call from Creator to be a bridge maker between the animals, the lands, and the humans, because we are still not really listening to them. And one of the things I've always practiced my whole life is interspecies communication. Communicating with the animals and the land and all life forms around me, especially trees, for example, because sometimes they're so old, they have so much to tell us because they're 200-300 years old and they have seen so much. So I've always practiced that naturally my whole life. But as you can imagine, you know, in a more cerebrally oriented warrior culture like Germany, that was not anything that was welcome. And when I came to New Mexico, I became the adopted daughter and apprentice of one of the medicine people there. And she, for the first time, made it real. When I said, I need to go out and talk to the trees or the animals, she would say, yes, please do, and let me know what they said and what's going on. And when I said, well, don't you think that's strange? She said, no. We talk to the animals, too. We talk to the land. That's your birthright, and there's nothing wrong with it. And so for the first time, when she affirmed me, I could go all the way out, no holds barred, and I could really hone my skills and let them come back to their full bloom and blossoming. And so that's still something I'm doing with people and their domesticated animals, for example, because often we're so close to our pets that it's like children, that we love them and we are right there with them, but we cannot really discern what they're saying because it's just too close or we don't trust ourselves. So so I have kind of the role of a bridge maker there and of an interpreter, and also with our wild animals, because I spend a lot of time up in Montana, and people move there because they're really attracted to the immense beauty and vastness and wildness. But what's happening is they buy a piece of land, they have seen a lot of animals before, you know, like, let's say, elk calving or a grizzly coming through, but and they want to be a part of that. But then they build a house right on the calving ground unknowingly. They bring a little dog that maybe gets lost after a while or gets hurt or isn't so used to the environment. They put up a bird feeder, which attracts the bears. But then the yard or whatever, whatever area it is that the humans put the bird feeder on becomes the food source for the bear, and all of a sudden the bear then starts coming back more and more and maybe having a problem with the dog, because the dog now is a competitor to the food source. And before you know it, the bear gets tranquilized or killed, the mountain lion gets killed, and the whole beautiful ecosystem that used to be there waiting for us humans to be a part of it is now void of their original inhabitants, and the people live in a fortress-like place where they have walls all over and fences, and where they just don't seem to be able to coexist with their wild neighbors, and before they know it, they're all gone. And so that is, to me, is very sad, because the animals really want to be with us and they want to coexist with us. And at some point they told me, Eke, we always used to be able to be a step ahead of you and get away from you, but now you're everywhere. You humans are everywhere. You build houses in the middle of the wilderness, and now we have no place to go and to get out of your way. So that sounds very sad, but it's also a great, immense opportunity for us, because now we have to coexist. We have to go back to Eden, and we have to relearn or reclaim those skills that are our birthright, namely communicating with our environment and the animals around us, being a part of it again, reclaiming our role as guardians and as caretakers, not as takers, as caretakers. And, you know, that really benefits us too, because a lot of us are very lonely because we're so separate and we live such separate lives where we really have put ourselves on top of everything, and yet we are also afraid of everything and everybody else. And so we're suffering a lot of depression and a lot of disconnection. But starting on the road to recovery, meaning giving it a chance again to coexist with each other and other life forms, is really helping us too, and is taking away a lot of those depression feelings of separation. So it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful opportunity for us to reclaim our rightful place again in the ecosystem, because all we are is another animal. You know, we always think we're so special, but we're an animal, the human animal among all the other animals, and they have a lot to teach us, and they have a lot to give us, and we have a lot to give them. And so there is a lot of potential right now. When we come from love for instead of fear against, and when we really give things a chance again. So I also take people in the wilderness, into the wilderness, in a different way, in a connected way, where we are not like these separate entities entering into the last sliver of the wild one's former habitat, armed with bear spray, armed with fear, armed with toys like mountain bikes that look like a fleeing deer to a bear who has bad eyesight when they go down a mountain, and being totally disconnected. But coming from love for, being tuned in and turned on and tapped in to what's really going on, because what's happening is we are entering their living room. And it's really so funny to me, because we go into the wilderness, we see a bear, and we're like, oh my God, a bear! But it should be the other way around. Oh my gosh, a human, because it's really their place, their living room, their house, and we are entering it. And to be really surprised to find a bear or a lion or a wolf, that doesn't make sense to me, because we are going into their last sliver of their former habitat, and we need to go in with reverence, with respect, with love for them, so that we can have mutually beneficial, beautiful experience with them, instead of just running through on our bikes or jogging, to just really tune in and spend time with them. And to give you an example of what I mean is, for example, I always sing my bear song when I'm in grizzly bear country. And it is for the bears, so that they hear me and they hear my voice and they hear my love and my intention, and then they can make their choice, you know, do I meet her or do I get out of her way? And it's up to them, and it's not just up to me. And so it's reciprocal. And one day I was singing my bear song, and I come around the corner, and there's a male grizzly bear standing on his hind legs eating berries. Because it was the hyperphagic time, when they're really, really hungry, when they have to pack on the pounds before they go into hibernation, but which is really a little different. I'll tell you all about it in a minute. But so he decided to meet me, and you know, and he looked at me, but not straight on. He looked at me kind of like out of the corner of his eye, and he didn't move his head in my direction. He was just kind of like, is it okay if I look at you? Is it okay? Will you be freaked out? Will you be scared? And I said, no, please. I'm so happy to see you here. And I looked at him, and I had tears in my eyes, and I said, I love you, and thank you for being here. We need you here on this planet, and your presence on this mountain is so needed, and I'm so glad you're here, and I will do anything I can to help you stay on this planet. And then he turned and he looked me straight in the eyes, and I did look into his eyes, and we both in this moment threw overboard what our mothers had told us, namely, a bear, get away, a human, get away. We both took a chance. And we looked at each other, and something very, very ancient happened. I had this recognition of, like, this is what a bear is. And he looked at me like, this is what a woman really is. And I said, bear. And he said to me, woman, bear, woman. And we got so excited, because I saw a true bear who wasn't scared running away from me. He saw a true woman who wasn't scared running away from him. And we could make contact and look into each other's souls, and not just into each other's eyes, but into each other's souls, and find the connection that's available to all of us If you leave fear behind, all the preconceived notions, all the old stories, and if we come from a new story. And it wasn't just Bear and I, it was also Creator. We were all together. And it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. But I also knew that I need to let it go and not take pictures or draw it out. And I thanked him, he thanked me, and when that fleeting and holy moment in time had passed, I turned and kept on walking, he turned and kept on eating. And I will never forget that. And I still get messages from him, he still thinks about me and what happened, because it made him really happy, because he didn't have to run away from a human in his own living room while eating, because that human would have been too afraid to face Bear.
Wow. What a story.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So this is my life. Yeah, this is my life, and this is the experiences I have, because I go into the wilderness with this attitude of what I call fearless, empty, and loving. I don't throw any fears at my brothers and sisters, the animals. I don't want anything from them, because we always want pictures and encounters and footage and this and that. I don't want anything. I'm loving, as in, here I am, I love you, I realize I am in your living room. And then I also always ask for permission. And when I get a no, I don't go, because sometimes they might have a kill on the trail, or they might be doing something that I would not be really, I wouldn't be a good addition to it. So when I get a no, I don't go. And I really, truly respect them, as I would my neighbors. If they don't open the door when I ring the bell, then I don't barge in either. So I grant my brothers and sisters, the animals, the same rights as I would grant any human or myself. So, yes, and it makes for a beautiful, beautiful, amazing time when I'm in the wilderness. It's like everything is flowing. And there's no fear and there's no danger, really. And I must also say, I'm not doing things in a disconnected way, you know, thinking about my personal life or what I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm really fully present, because that's what I owe them, that I come fully present and with that connection and love in my heart.
Wow. Well, you're definitely in the area for it. So you live in north or northwest New Mexico, right?
Yeah, I divide my time between Montana. Lately I've been in Montana most of the year, but then I also spend some time in New Mexico. But I used to live there for over 20 years, so I've done a lot of work there already. So I spend more time up like in Idaho, the Montana area, because they started hunting the wolf there again, and I go into the schools to work with the children there and also to study the impact of the hunt on the wolves. So lately I've been more in Montana. Mm-hmm. And I went there because we still have it's the last state where we have the big five, the wolf, the wolverine, the grizzly bear, the mountain lion, and the lynx. So.
Wow. Yeah, I was born in northern Minnesota. Supposedly has the highest concentration of wolves, or at least I guess one variety of wolf in the northern hemisphere. Have you done any thinking about going over into northern Minnesota? Lots of German folk there.
Yes, I've been thinking of spreading the word in the film and doing one big tour, because I also just released the bison video that I did about our last wild bison. So, yeah, it's definitely on my wish list, but I'll need to see if it can be made possible. So And it will be possible, but I don't know when yet, so.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, so tell folks about your book and where they can find it, how to contact
you. It's called Wolves and Humans, A New Story of Coexistence. And because I never liked Little Red Riding Hood the way it was told to me, I always wanted to write the antidote story. And that's what Wolves and Humans really is. You can find it on Amazon. Wolves and Humans, A New Story of Coexistence. And we also have it at several bookstores in New Mexico. I want to get it into more bookstores and maybe the national parks, because it is basically the story of how it can work with humans and wolves when we're willing to do so and when we're connected. And it also has my own story and all the different things that I learned about wolves while in the field with them. And also has the examples of the return of the German wolves. It's geared towards teachers and students, but it's really for everybody. So, but I would like to get it into as many schools as possible, because when we give our youngsters a chance to really see the new story right away and to refrain from being fearful towards wild animal human contacts, then we have a better chance for the next generations to do things differently. So you can find it on Amazon. It was just nominated for a Western Book Award. So keep your fingers crossed. I'll hear.
Oh,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it happens,
I mean, you know,
spring, so.
Wolf is, if I remember right, is also the Wolf Clan is one of the seven Cherokee clans. I think it's in Cherokee. It's something like Aniwaya or something like that.
Aniwaya.
Correct me
Waya.
On my pronunciation.
Yeah, it's the leading clan. They did everything first, and they supposedly had kind of the 51% share of like the government, and they were the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
a lot of the nations have the Wolf Clan or have certain stories that they tell during the winter months about wolves. So they play a huge role for all the indigenous people all over the place, all over the northern hemisphere where the wolves are. And it is very, very important. A lot of the nations have told me that we learned from wolves how to hunt and raise a family. And in both my book and the film has a chapter on the native wolf relationship. So, and one of my godchildren is Wolf Clan in Wisconsin from the Oneida. So he has been a big messenger for the film.
Outstanding. Yeah, well, and the interesting thing about all Cherokee clans, probably not a lot of Cherokees know this. I mean, most Cherokees nowadays don't even know what clan they descend from. But there was the idea that all Cherokee clans were under the Bear Clan, that the Bear Clan was the most ancient and was the originator. And then there was the idea that the Bear Clan, well, in the Chickamauga Cherokee stomp grounds, there were eight benches. And the bench in the north was the Bear Clan bench, but it was left empty because in our stories, there was a time when the people were starving and there was no food, and it was a time of drought and famine, and the Bear Clan went into the wilderness and returned, after they had somehow transformed themselves into bears, and then they allowed themselves to become sacrificed and to feed the nation. So there's a, and it's really interesting because we also believe that anciently we migrated in boats across the Eastern Ocean, and the Bear Clan in Europe is the most ancient clan. So there's probably some kind of a connection there because the clans basically are the same in both places.
You know, in the Hopi, the Bear Clan is also the main clan of authority on their power for this world cycle.
Right.
So, yeah, that bear shows up a lot.
There's a very, very small Bear Clan within the Navajo Nation, too. A little bit bigger than the Athabascan people up in Canada, you know, have a bigger part of it. But I met one elder who was a Bear Clan Navajo.
That is awesome. But, yeah, I just remembered that I wanted to tell you too that now they are doing research on bears, and they are really not sleeping, because if they were sleeping, they would be poisoning themselves in their metabolism because they are not going to the bathroom. It's more like they are meditating. Their waves, their brain waves, as they are in a state of rest during the winter, really are closer to a meditating person. And I wanted to share that.
Well, there's a monastery in Switzerland that was originally a monastery before Christian times. It was a Ursuline, I think they're called the Ursuline Sisters.
Yes.
And became part of the Catholic Church. But there's that idea that goes way back. And I think, well, I don't know. Years ago, there was two movies that were made. One of them was called Ice Age Columbus. And the other was called 10,000 Years B.C. And they this came out like 10, 15 years ago. The idea that the Salutrian people that lived on the coast of France at that time, the ice bridge came all the way down to France and across to Newfoundland. And that these people apparently were either dreaming about or had to go out on the ice and hunt seal, because there were depictions of seals found in their caves. But they apparently found themselves, and somehow climatologists figured out that, you know, had there been a mile high ice bridge, that any of these hunters that had been forced to camp on the ice during storms eventually would have had, and they showed how it was done, or in a matter of weeks they would have found themselves over in Newfoundland, or it's possible that they were put out, that they were outcasts. And this is the History Channel, National Geographic and History Channel both on this. And but they were, I noticed, well, nothing was said, but I noticed that the outcasts were depicted as Bear Clan because of their bear claw necklaces. But it's really mystical. I've got a friend, Bob Strongbear Bates. Years ago, I was in his home, and he was going through his safe. He had a lot of sacred items, and he pulled out a bear claw necklace. And it still had fur, a little bits of fur that were left, and it was strung on a necklace. And he said, "Oh, just put it on." And he says, "Oh, I have to go into the bathroom." And he went in the bathroom for a few minutes, and I was just sitting on the floor in front of the his couch, And I just kind of close my eyes, and it's pretty easy for me to slip into an altered state. And when he came out, he had to shake me awake. He says I wasn't breathing. And as I came awake, I was staring right into the face of this bear with his mouth open. It really shook me up. It was really interesting. But well, on that, you know, wolves, you know, I've always had, there was something about, and that's what led me into scouting, was my godparent's son had a little Cub Scout plaque, and wolf is the first rank in Cub Scouts, and I was always attracted to, well, didn't know why, didn't know about my Cherokee heritage, and so both of them have real special significance for me. And if folks, you know, care to take a look and think about these things and try to dream about them, they can have a big influence on you.
Yes, and when you think about it, you know, we are all indigenous. You know, in Europe, the tribal way of life has been gone for a lot longer. But still, you know, one year in the winter, I sat down in this cabin where I could only get there on skis, and I had no distractions. And I looked at all the things we did on the farm, you know, all the rituals and the ceremonies. And I looked at them, and they were really Celtic, or they went way far back. You know, like whenever, for example, you kill a deer in Germany, you would put a green twig or some grass into the mouth of the animal. That's their last supper, basically, and that's honoring the animal and basically getting back to nature and how we are all one, and how now their blood runs in our blood and they are feeding us. And so a lot of the things that we did, people didn't know anymore where they came from, but I really dug deep and it's still there. It's not lost. And one of my friends from the Assiniboine, he said, okay, you know, everything is still here. Nothing is lost, waiting for us to wake up and reclaim it again. So we all have that connection. It's really our birthright. And when I look around right now, there is a lot going on in terms of going back to ceremony and gratitude. And you spelled it out so great, Mark, earlier, saying, you know, like, this is a woman of gratitude. And I am, you know, because it's such a gift to be on this planet. But I'm not the only one. We are now getting together in gratitude. And it's not this rote behavior anymore, like saying a prayer under your breath so you can start eating. It really means something deeply to us, because we need that again, and we all remember that. And in my ancestry, it doesn't even go back that far. We still had the our oxen, the ancestors of our cattle today until the 1600s. And this is a creature that stood 6 feet tall at the shoulder. So our large animals have been gone for longer than here, and our connection to the land has been gone maybe for longer, but it's not really gone. It's still here waiting for us to reclaim it. And this is such an exciting time, and this is why I'm so happy to be here today to share my passion, because I know it's available to all of us. And we don't have to be anybody special. It's just really there. We can all connect again, and we can all claim our rightful space and place. And I've just finished my documentary, Bison Nation, Walking Sacred Sites. And I named it Walking Sacred Sites because Rosalie Little Thunder from the Lakota called them walking sacred sites, because they take care of our biggest sacred site, the earth. And most of the people that I've ever talked to don't know that we still have bison in Europe, and I don't know if our listeners know, or but we have bison in Europe. There have been always bison in the Northern Hemisphere, and they're coming back from the brink of extinction there just as much as here. The parallels are uncanny. Like here we had 23 that hid in the bowels of Yellowstone National Park, the last wild ones. In Europe we had about 50 in captivity, and we started wanting them back, and so started breeding them again. So now there's about 4,000 in Europe, and there's 4,000 wild ones here in the U.S. It's really amazing, and it's a different kind of bison. It's the wood bison, because we have the steppes and the prairies in Russia, but we don't have them so much in Central Europe. We have more wooded areas, so they're wood bison, and they have longer legs, and they reach up high to eat the leaves and the bark of the trees. But it's the same, and the parallels that I found while doing research, while filming in Europe, while filming in the U.S., there's so many parallels between the ancestors in Europe and the ancestors here, and it's no coincidence that we are now finding, in parentheses, all these caves again. You know, of course, they were never lost, but we didn't have access to them until maybe somebody by accident, which is really not accident, but synchronicity, found them again 10, 20, 30 years ago. And we have this cave of in Chauvet in France, and the cave paintings are up to 40,000 years old, and you wouldn't believe the most beautiful depictions of bison there. You know, it's not like this is my food. No, this is my beloved animal that's keeping me alive, because you can tell, you know, if you Google Chauvet and cave paintings, you can find paintings of lions, wild horses, ancestral horses, and bison and other animals that are so beautiful, and you wonder how somebody 40,000 years ago was such an amazing artist in the dark in a cave. But you could tell that they had this amazing connection, because otherwise the animal drawings and paintings would never have turned out so awesome. We also found just recently, I guess it's been 20 years ago after communism fell in the East, you know, East Germany was more accessible again, and a survey plane flew over this area, and they found two just perfect circles, one inside of the other, and they checked it out, and it is the German Stonehenge that was even older than the Stonehenge in Britain, 7,000 years old. But it's not Stonehenge, it's Pillarhenge, because it was made out of two circles of wooden pillars. And so we are finding all these amazing things again, but it's not really that we're finding them. It's more like that the time is right to connect with the ancient wisdom again, and how our ancestors lived and what they want to show us, because we are ready. So it's been such an amazing thing in my quest to find the bison in Europe. I found so many other things from the past, and at some point it really became very, very clear to me that I wouldn't be here either without the bison, that my ancestors depended on them too, and that their blood runs through my veins as well. And that was just such an amazing moment of gratitude for these animals. And again, I was like, I'm gonna help you thrive on this planet. I'm gonna tell you a story. I'm gonna make a documentary. And I told you earlier that I had always been wishing as a child to spend time with these large herds, and it never happened, but I didn't give up. And one time, 6 years ago, I was in Yellowstone National Park backpacking by myself, and on my trail stood a bison bull broadside blocking my trail. Really, I could tell he didn't want me to go. And I said to him, you know, I can go anywhere in this world, but you can. This is your last sliver of your habitat. I'm going to take my backpack off. I'm going to wait. You do your thing, and then I don't want to bother you, and then I can go later. But he looked at me and looked and looked and looked and didn't let me go. And I'm like, okay, so what's happening? What's gonna happen here? What's going on? What do you want to tell me? And before I knew it, all these bison came down the hill. I counted more than 400 of them, and they surrounded me. And there were mothers and calves and fathers, and because it was rutting season, so the bulls were with the herd, and they were protecting the mothers, and the smallest and weakest ones were in, and oldest ones were in the middle, and the bulls were making a circle around them, and there were all these families. And I realized that was my childhood dream come true. Yes, there we go, that's a bull. Thank you. So that's exactly what it was like. And so that's what they sound when they go after a cow. Thank you. And so I realized that my childhood dream had come true. And something was activated almost on a cellular DNA level inside of me. It's like, these are my relatives. And without them, I would not be on this planet. They fed us on both sides, you know, in what's now Europe and North America before it was even named. So thank you. I had to tell you that story. My childhood dream did come true.
did you ever figure out that that fellow that told you that the Nazis would have gotten rid of you, did you ever figure out he was lying? He didn't know what he was talking about?
Yes, exactly, yes.
Yeah, because Hitler was very, very fond and connected to wolves.
Yes, he named his
U-boat.
Wolfschanze. He named his some headquarters after the wolves, yes. But I think that gentleman in my my village who has since passed on, I think he was more into like nobody sticks out. If somebody sticks out,
right,
we have to take him out. That's more what he meant, I think. You know, like here's a human who is different and is sticking her neck out, and we don't want that because we want everybody to march to the same beat.
Oh yeah,
so,
you know, we have a lot of homeschooling in this country, but it's illegal in Germany because they don't want anybody being different. They want everybody educated by the state, and it's a completely, and you know, my dad's mother was from Germany,
yes,
and father was from Sweden, and the three languages spoken in the home, and you know, my dad really kind of hated the old country, but he was very much, you know, his attitudes were, you know, we're still kind of that way, and we butted heads on that. You know, there was a time or two that I reminded him that there was, his behavior was a little bit toward the SS and a little less toward the Waffen, you know. So anyway,
but I have to admit that things have changed a lot in the last 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
Since I was
Tell
a
me
kid.
About it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it. It's like,
it's
wow.
It's amazing. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, they're very different people.
Yes. And not just in Germany, everywhere. And it feels like there's people everywhere that brought in the old wisdom. You know, wherever you go, it's not just one country or one tribe that will lead us or help us. No, it's people everywhere that came in, connected with the old wisdom, and that are helping us move forward now, where we have a hard time letting go of some preconceived notion of the way things used to be. So it feels like there's a fresh wind blowing everywhere, and there's young people everywhere, and things are turning around, and I can feel it, and it's amazing. And I'm so grateful to be here during this time on this earth. So
you bet. Well, well, that's probably a good place to leave it. We'll reconnect with you, Bish Speta, and encourage you to go gerade aus in your efforts, and appreciate you. Ich habe jetzt drei Jahre Deutsch im, well, they used to call it gymnasium when I was a kid, you know, high school.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But, it was fun. But I'll have to say, entschuldigen Sie for, you know, how little I remember.
It's dormant. You can probably understand it, but not speak it. You know, it's hard to find the words, but you would understand them if I said them. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, you know, there was a young couple there in Nauvoo. They were on foot, and I helped them find rent bicycles. And you met them, didn't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're my friends from
Austria.
Right. And we had
Tatiana and Bernhard. Mm-hmm.
They got a kick out of my little anecdotes, you know, in German, and it was fun. And probably a good place to leave it. The program will be available, you know, for many years, and I can send you a link. You know, you can put a link directly to it, you know, from your website, and you can download it and do whatever you want with it. But we appreciate you.
Great.
All right. And Mark, you got any parting shots?
No. Just good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Thanks a lot.
Good night. Thank you so much. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. And you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away's a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, the mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. One with me.